Good morning. And thanks to the first panelists for taking their seats. My name is Andy Cutchins. I'm the director of the Russian Eurasia program here at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. And first of all, allow me to apologize for my tardiness today and being caught up in traffic and causing us to start about 10 or 15 minutes late. I think we have a really interesting program this morning. The Russia Eurasia program at CSIS has done a lot of work in this region over the past few years, looking closely at the North Caucasus, the South Caucasus, looking at the interaction of the North Caucasus, the South Caucasus, and regional powers, influential regional powers around it in a paradigm we called the Big Caucasus. We've also explored this in some detail in a project that looks at the nexus between Turkey, Russia, Iran relations. One thing we have not done, and thanks to the visit of the Center for Strategic Studies in Azerbaijan in Washington this week, is have an opportunity to look at closely the relationship between Iran and Azerbaijan itself. This is a bilateral relationship that has implications for domestic politics in both countries. It's a relationship that clearly has implications for security and economic issues, political issues in the South Caucasus, as well as in the greater Middle East, as well as on more global issues such as nuclear nonproliferation and more specifically the Iranian nuclear program. So with great pleasure, I want to welcome and invite to the podium the director for the Center for Strategic Studies, Farhad Mamadov, who will make some introductory remarks to launch our conference, and then we'll move into the first panel. Dr. Mamadov.
Thank you. Dear ladies and gentlemen, I would like to welcome you on behalf of the Azerbaijani delegation and the Center for Strategic Studies of Azerbaijan and to thank you for organizing conference on Iranian-Azerbaijani relations at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. I would like to say, first of all, that I am speaking at the event as a scholar and the views expressed herein are my own and don't necessarily represent the views of the government of Azerbaijan. History is a very important factor in our region, just like the other regions of the East. The majority of disputes and disagreements have a historical background. Looking back, we can see, for example, that for nearly 1,000 years, Iran or the geographical territory known as Iran was ruled by Turkish dynasties. For instance, the Afghan city of Ghazni was recently declared a center of Islamic civilization by UNESCO, honoring the 12th century Ghaznavid dynasty, Turks by origin, whose territory included present-day Iran. These and other Turkish dynasties are also the founders of the modern Azerbaijani ethnicity. When it comes to Iran, we can see that Iran began to be associated with the Persian element and Persian identity only after the Pahlavi dynasty came to power in the early 20th century. Today, according to various sources, Iran is home to 20 to 25 million people of ethnic Azerbaijani origin. Most of them consider Iran as their own country. The history of Azerbaijan indicates that after the Russia-Iranian War of 1828 and the signing of the Treaty of Turkmenchay, historical Azerbaijan was divided and a large part of it remained within Iran. As a consequence of the agreement, Armenian immigrants from Iran and countries in the Near East arrived in northern present-day Azerbaijan. Let me add that I use that term in a geographical, not political sense. Thus, the beginning of the 19th century marked a turning point after which we can start talking about the emergence of Iranian-Azerbaijani relations. Iran's attitude towards northern Azerbaijan as part of the Russian Empire was contingent on its attitude towards the southern part of Azerbaijan. In the early 20th century, the Azerbaijanis of the north and south had unprecedented contact. Azerbaijan's declaration of independence stated that immediate measures were to be taken to establish friendly relations with bordering nations. Contrary to the Azerbaijani government's attempt to establish normal diplomatic relations with neighboring countries, Iran soon demonstrated its anxiety concerning the creation of a state with name Azerbaijan. The Iranian side predicted that the Azerbaijan Republic would sooner or later have influence in South Azerbaijan. During the Paris Peace Conference at the beginning of 1919, Iran presented an official memorandum of light of these worries. After the Soviet occupation of Azerbaijan in 1920, the relations between Iran and Azerbaijan became the bilateral relationship between the Soviet Union and Iran. It might be useful to recall the Great Liberation Movement for the Rights of the Azerbaijanis, which started in southern Azerbaijan at the end of World War II in 1945 and received support in the north. Nevertheless, after the collapse of the Soviet Union, relations between Iran and Azerbaijan started to develop. In 1991-1993, nationalist sentiments in support of a Turkish-oriented national identity were afoot in Azerbaijan. This led some caution on Iran's behalf. During the stage of active hostilities in Nagorno-Karabakh, Iran's actions were limited to calls for a peaceful settlement. But the opinions of the Iranian government were angled toward weakening Azerbaijan's position. For example, the loss of the Azerbaijani town of Shusha in Nagorno-Karabakh occurred immediately after peace talks held in Iran, during which the occupying Armenian armed units were able to regroup. Thus, Iranian-Azerbaijani relations are characterized by ups and downs, occasional stabilization, and rising tensions. To illustrate this thesis, there are several dimensions of the relationship that can be reviewed. First of all, Iran's attitude to the contested legal status of the Caspian Sea and division of Caspian energy resources, Iran's vision of the Armenian-Azerbaijani Nagorno-Karabakh conflict, and Iranian-Azerbaijani relations in the context of the regional and global geopolitics. On the issue of the legal status of the Caspian Sea and the division of its energy resources, Iran has never been a major player because no matter how many times we hear about the discovery of new superfields of hydrocarbons, no significant reserves of oil and gas have been found in the Iranian sector of the Caspian Sea. Yet, the exploration, production, and transformation of Caspian energy resources were the subjects of several diplomatic notes sent by Iran in the middle 19th. To this day, Iran has not backed down from its position on the legal status of the Caspian Sea, which has delayed negotiations and means that this issue remains on the agenda of the littoral countries. In the 19th, Iran was one of the Azerbaijan's top trade partners. But during the past decade, Iran has gradually lost this position. Whereas in 2007, the volume of trade between the two countries amounted to $540 million. In 2011, it was just $305 million. Azerbaijan's total turnover by the end of 2011 amounted to more than $36 billion. Of which Iran's share was only 0.8%. Further, in 2011, Iran was ranked just 19th among Azerbaijan's trade partners and in 23rd in 2012. According to Iranian statistics, Azerbaijan is not among Iran's top 10 trading partners. Iran's position on the Armenian-Azerbaijan and Nagorno-Karabakh conflict is one of the most important factors of Iranian-Azerbaijan relations. As a result of the Armenian occupation of 20% of Azerbaijani territory and the ethnic cleansing of Azerbaijanis, resulting in a million Azerbaijanis becoming refugees and IDPs, Armenia's border with Azerbaijan and Turkey have been closed for about 20 years. There are two out of the four countries with which Armenia shares a border. Thus, Armenia's relations with Iran and Georgia are vital. This is well understood in Tehran, which shows significant interest in relations with Armenia. Although Iran has formally expressed support for the territorial integrity of Azerbaijan, along with the Minsk Group co-chair countries, it's not taking effective steps to punish the aggressor. On the contrary, Iran and Armenia have dramatically increased their trade in recent years. Whereas in 2011, the volume of bilateral trade amounted to $335 million. Recent data shows it has reached more than $500 million. Both sides have declared their intention to increase this to $1 billion. As President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad has said, Iran accounts for 20% of Armenia's foreign trade. According to Armenian sources, there are 500 Iranian companies registered there, compared to only 200 in Azerbaijan. Iran is interested in good relations with Armenia for a number of reasons. This includes support for Armenia in accessing the Black Sea coast, as well as a desire to take advantage of the information and networking resources of the Armenian diaspora in France, the United States, and other countries. After all, every time the issue of an attack on Iran comes to the fore, the Armenian diaspora reminds their respective government that Iran is one of the Armenians' two sources of oxygen. In this context, it's quite symbolic that Iranian Foreign Minister Salehi attended the inauguration of President Sargsyan last month. After signing of the so-called contract of the century and the launch of the pipeline infrastructure exporting oil to world markets, some groups in Iran has actively sought to prevent Azerbaijan from strengthening its regional position. The first stand of this strategy is increasing pressure on Azerbaijan's domestic policy. Many of you know that as a country with a Shiite majority Muslim population, Azerbaijan is of particular interest to Iran. History shows that religious affiliation is a priority for modern Iranian identity. In second place is civic identity, which serves to suppress ethnic identity. The desire of certain circles in Iran to export this form of self-identification to Azerbaijan has failed. The totalitarian nature of Iran's religious and political leadership failed to attract a secular Azerbaijan. Our economic development and the overall crisis in Iran have made Iran's political and economic models an appealing to our citizens. The only channel of influence that can be exploited is religious affiliation. Every Shiite, in addition to the Holy Quran, the teaching of Prophet Muhammad and his successor Ali, should be guided by the instructions of the Mujtahid. The problem is that at present there are only 31 of them left, and they are Persians, almost all living in Iran. Informational resources are very huge from Iran to Azerbaijan. For example, Sahar 2, an Iranian television channel that broadcasts in Azerbaijani, along with numerous internet resources, calling on the population of Azerbaijan to abandon the secular lifestyle and to establish a regime similar to Iran's. The pressure on Azerbaijan should be seen in the context of the overall situation unfolding around Iran in the past 20 years. After the occupation of Iraq by the United States, Iran dramatically increased its activity around the borders in Lebanon, Syria, Pakistan, in Iran, Bahrain, and of course, the South Caucasus. The hike of oil prices resolved the question of financing active work in the aforementioned regions and countries. For example, the media outlets affiliated with Iran have actively covered the Armenian-Turkish normalization and the U.S. support for this process. That did some damage to the public image of the United States in Azerbaijan. As a result, this poorly thought-out normalization of relations between Armenia and Turkey helped Iran by strengthening its position in Armenia and in Azerbaijan. Despite all of these factors, the Republic of Azerbaijan attached special importance to its relations with Iran because equal and mutually beneficial relations with neighbors are a priority of our foreign policy. Certain circles in Iran see the secularism, economic and especially cultural development of Azerbaijan as a threat to the current religious and political system of the Islamic Republic. Another group perceive Azerbaijan as a threat following the provocation regarding the use of Azerbaijani territory for launching a strike against Iran. But none of these statements can be substantiated. Our president has repeatedly stated that Azerbaijani territory cannot be used against the neighbors. Azerbaijan upholds this principle for many reasons, but one of the arguments is purely pragmatic. We don't want to see the economic situation deteriorate in a country that is home of millions of our brothers and sisters. Our government has repeatedly stated that it will not interfere in the internal affairs of Iran in the context of infringement of the rights of the local population. We will not tolerate any interference in our own internal affairs either. Having said that, we don't understand Iran's positively and lack of funding for the implementation of north-south transportation projects on the other hand, and the one side's focus and then financing of energy and transport projects in Armenia on the other. It's quite clear that projects in Armenia are not financially viable and will not bring much benefit. To conclude, I would like to state that Iranian-Azerbaijan relations can be described as relations of neighbors, but there is no pragmatism from Iran. A change in the relationship may be anticipated in the short term in context of Iran's democratization, when the opinion of Iran's Azeri population will have more impact and will be proportionate in terms of political participation. Only this component can qualitatively change Iranian policy towards Azerbaijan and the South Caucasus as a whole, making it more stable under the banner of good neighborliness, mutual beneficial cooperation, and protection of the norms and principles of international law. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you very much, Dr. Mametov, for a very comprehensive keynote address, raising virtually the full panorama of issues that we'll be continuing to discuss as the morning goes along. Yes, that's fine. So we're going to turn now to our first panelists, and we will go in the order as how they were listed in the program. And let me welcome give the floor to Mr. Asim Molazadeh from the Parliament of Azerbaijan.
Thank you very much. We appreciate that CSIS organized this event because Situation in a region, the big region of Middle East, Caucasus, Central Asia, dramatically changing after the events in Syria. And right now, I would like to start from history, because Azerbaijan is a small country in South Caucasus, and historically, South Caucasus, all this region was a region of great games. Big empires like Russian Empire, Ottoman Empire, Persian Empire, always fighting, and small nations in this region always suffered of these zero-sum games of great empire, British Empire. If we look to the history in this region, we'll find a very interesting thing that Iran and Azerbaijan always was something like starting point of a very interesting event. For example, we think that one of the issues why Cold War started so fast was the issue of Azerbaijan. In 1944, there were Azerbaijani Republic of South Azerbaijan, and you know that in 1941, Soviet Union and UK divided Iran, because Iran had flirting with fascist Germany. And as a result of that, northern part of Azerbaijan, third time in the history, they were created a Republic of Azerbaijan. But an interesting fact that during the meeting in Crimea, Winston Churchill and Joseph Stalin agreed to switch Azerbaijan and Poland. It's a dramatic situation on the history of Polish people and Azerbaijani people as a result of transferring Poland to Soviet Union. A lot of Polish people were massacred, and you know the fate of Armia Ludowa in Poland after the occupation, the dramatic tragedy of Polish people, but there is a lack of information what kind of tragedy happened in Tabriz. Thousands of Azerbaijani people were massacred. They were massacred also. It was something like joint operation of Persia and Stalin regime, because some of people who escaped to Soviet Union also were killed there. And maybe it's an interesting point that Poland and Azerbaijan had an historic links. Maybe it sounds paradoxical here, but in Russian Empire, where Poland was a part of that independence movement based in Baku, Azerbaijan. When Bolshevik army occupied Azerbaijan, Baku, Azerbaijani government moved to Poland and continued struggle for independence in Poland. It's an interesting situation that during the struggle of Azerbaijani people of independence, role of solidarity and Polish movement and struggle for against communism was linked to Azerbaijan. Very interesting links, because Azerbaijan from the beginning of 20th century became a world oil center. At the same time, Azerbaijan, in very turbulent area, has been created first secular multi-party parliamentary government in a Muslim Turkish world. It's a very important value for Azerbaijan, and when our country again achieved independence in 1991, Azerbaijan restored all the same principle, same flag, same symbolism, and same secular state in Muslim world. It became something like a tragic event for Iranian Islamist regime. Independent Azerbaijan, with the presence of Western companies, with open goal, because in all documents of Azerbaijan Republic, strategy of its development, it's a Euro-Atlantic integration. And sometimes people asking why Iran, why Islamic Republic of Iran is a military ally of Armenia and against Azerbaijan, because existence of Azerbaijan, country with name of Azerbaijan, is a serious threat for them. Iran think that they are even calling us not Azerbaijan but Iran. You are Iran, you are not Azerbaijan. And it's maybe something which based on ideology, because when people from Iran coming to Baku, it's something like people from former Soviet Union visiting Paris. And it's a serious ideological threat for them. And of course, during the last year, Iran gave a serious support to Armenia in a military action against Azerbaijan. And we are looking to the situation when there is a triangle. Russia, with the ambition of some forces to restore Soviet Union, Iran, which afraid of existing pro-Western Muslim-populated country, and Armenia, which really it's bad for us, which lost an independence. Because in South Caucasus, we need the serious cooperation of all countries which are there. Right now, there is a serious partnership between Azerbaijan and Georgia, which choose a way of Euro-Atlantic integration. Armenia, which became a military base of Russian Federation, and Russia privatized all industry, transport, energy of Armenia, did not invest anything, but there is a huge troop which is a major factor of domestic political life of Armenia. And in the same situation, after events in Syria, Russia and Iran started a serious activity. Just one factor. There is not a there are bilateral links between Caspian country like Kazakhstan, Azerbaijan, Turkmenistan, Russia agreed about the division of Caspian Sea. Iran is opposing. And at the same time, there is not a multi-party treaty about that. In 1921, between Soviet Union and Iran, there were a specific agreement and treaty that Iran has no right for military navy on Caspian Sea. After independence of Azerbaijan, Kazakhstan, other countries, collapse of Soviet Union, Russia unilaterally allowed them to have a navy on Caspian. It's an interesting situation that, for example, ships from Kazakhstan, Turkmenistan, has no access to Russian port in Astrakhan. Azerbaijan also. We have no access to Volga River. Iran has. It means that the Caspian Sea also became an area of cooperation between Russia and Iran. And in this situation, new countries, new independent countries of like Georgia and Azerbaijan, seriously suffering of this game. What Iran is doing? Trying to export Islamic revolution. They spend a lot of money. According to some Iranian sources, a period from 92 to 2000, Iran allocated in their budget about $48 million for Islamic groups in Georgia and Azerbaijan. Because also in Georgia, it's about a half a million of population, Muslim population, and Iran also trying to use this factor against Georgia as well, not only Azerbaijan. They failed to do that because strong secular traditions in Azerbaijan not allow them to use this Islamic factor. But they change track and trying to use a conflict which is existing between Azerbaijan and Armenia with the goal of create a pressure. 2 years ago, I was in Yerevan and I was in Karabakh. And it was strange for me to listen in Yerevan Azerbaijani language. A lot of people spoke Azerbaijani, and they were Iranians. Even a mosque in Yerevan under control of Iran. And a lot of support coming to Armenia, military support, it's economic support, came from Iran. There is another factor which recently changing the situation. It's a relationship between Azerbaijan, United States, and NATO country. Azerbaijan provides a great logistic to NATO operation in Afghanistan, and at the same time, relationship between Azerbaijan and Israel. From the first day of our independence, we have a big Jewish community in Azerbaijan, and it's a very important part of our culture and history. And there is an Azerbaijani diaspora in Israel. The relationship between Israel and Azerbaijan became a serious factor. Just economic figures. Trade between Azerbaijan and Iran is about something like 300 million, but trade between Azerbaijan and Israel, more than 4.5 billion. It's two times bigger than trade between Azerbaijan and Russia. Of course, this situation created a new factors, and after events in Syria, Iran provides very bold and aggressive politics in our region. Why are we speaking and trying to pick attention on American public attention to this issue? Because Azerbaijan and Georgia are strategic partners of the United States. Right now, there are events in the region, very turbulent events, and it's damaging national security interests of our people and national security interests of the United States. Iran is the country which is supporting, totalitarian country, which is supporting international terror in our region. For example, a member of Azerbaijani parliament was killed by Hezbollah mid of 90s. Now Azerbaijan playing together with its partners, Georgia, very important role for European energy security. We're breaking a monopoly of Russia for gas to Europe, and of course it's creating a new factors. Situation now in our region as it was in the middle of 90s when Azerbaijan signed a huge oil gas contract with international consortium with the support of the United States. Now Azerbaijan together with Turkey building a new pipeline system which giving a new hope for energy security of Europe, and situation became very difficult. Situation became difficult because of danger of Iran for all interests of Western country and its partners. That's why thank you for your attention, and I think that we need a serious effort of all our partners to the security situation in our region. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Malazadeh. Just a one note, since we started a little bit late, we're going to continue this first panel until 10:30. Another housekeeping note, unfortunately, Dr. Liu Zhang, our visiting fellow from China here at CSS right now, is unable to attend this morning because he has fallen ill over the weekend. So we'll have a shorter panel in the second panel, looking at regional and international implications of this relationship. Okay, let me turn now to Dr. Gaidar Mirza, a leading research fellow at the SAM Center in Azerbaijan. Welcome.
Thank you very much. I'd like to thank also Mr. Mamadov, because coincidentally he mentioned the issue of mujtahids that I'm going to touch a bit detailed way, and Mr. Molazadeh for the mentioning of the Polish factor in the story in the 40s. Probably that's where the Polish sympathies to Azerbaijan come from, because we always feel that support from the Polish people nowadays. There are different things in the relations of Azerbaijan with Iran, which basically, when analysts comment them, they talk about the current geopolitical context. But I think that in Azerbaijan, many analysts write about the historic prerequisites and the importance of reasons which stem from the history of the nation-building process of Azerbaijanis. However, in the West, not too many people know about that, and not too many people write about that. That's what I want to talk about today. Mr. Mamadov has touched a bit about the history. I want to go in a little bit more detail. By the middle of the 18th century, when the Safavid rule in Iran ended and the country entered a period of the long turmoil, more than 20 Khanates, semi-independent states existed in the territory of modern Azerbaijan. And they were on the both sides of the Arax River. Predominantly, they were Shiite, and their leaders, the Khans, they were also Shiites, and they almost all of them had roots from the Qızılbaş tribes, the Turkic Shiite Qızılbaş tribes, which were in future the core of the Azerbaijani nation building. These Khanates were vassals of the Persian throne, however, they didn't recognize that vassality. And the thing was that they always had to maneuver among Russia, Iran, and the Ottomans. And although that was the period when Azerbaijani language has distinguished from other Turkic languages of the region, that was the very important moment in the national building process, the subdivision brought to national tragedy, because in 1828, Russia and Iran signed the Turkmenchai Peace, under which the territories went to the Russian crown, and the territories south from the Arax River are still under Iran. And since that moment, the roadmaps of the two parts of the Azeri nation, they're developing in different ways. In the early 19th century, Azerbaijani Turks demonstrated low level of ethnic consciousness. That was a period when it was very specific for the unprecedented rise of national thought in literature. At the same time, religious and religious identity took primary place in the minds of people. Religion here was the fundament of identity. It was blocking other forms of self-identification, first of all, the ethnic self-identification. Before going on, I would like to say that I'm a Muslim, I'm a practicing Muslim, and I'm proud of it, but I'm also an analyst and scholar. And what we're talking about is about the importance of the religious thinking and secularity in the context of relations with Islam. The problem was that only in religion one could find support for his identity and uniqueness. And if in European Renaissance they brought to victory of secularism over clergy and gave huge impetus to the evolution of various forms of self-identification, like, for example, ethnic self-identification or civil self-identification. But in the Muslim world, Islamic dogmatism and religious obscurantism dominated for much longer. Clergy was the major obstacle in Azerbaijan for evolution of ethnic self-identification. However, Russian colonization brought to Azerbaijan European science and education, culture and values, ideas of enlightenment in the times when Islamic dogmatism was literally running through all the spheres of life. And under this influence, first Azerbaijani modernizers, nowadays known as the classicists of national literature, they fully understood that further cultural and social stagnation is conditioned primarily by religious self-identification. And the birth of Azerbaijani national thought in literature carried obvious anti-clerical character. That's a very important point. And it was built on harsh criticism of religious obscurant clergy. In other words, to become Azerbaijanis, people had to grow over Islam and to realize that there was something more than just Muslims of the Caucasus or Muslim Turks of the Caucasus. At the national building process for Azerbaijanis, it carried a very specific and very obvious secular character. It's not surprising then when Russian Empire collapsed in 1917, in 1918, the first secular republic, democratic parliamentary republic in the Turkic world, in the Muslim world, was established in Azerbaijan. It was a secular parliamentary republic, and it has three dogmas on which it was built. And it was the Turkic freedom, Islamic culture, and modernity. And the three things are described; they are symbolized in Azerbaijani tricolor even nowadays. In Soviet Azerbaijan, secular values were even strengthened due to obvious dogmatism of the Marxist ideology and its atheistic nature. So when in 1991, Azerbaijanis again chose secular option for its model of state, despite secular way of thinking, speaking, and doing business of politics, they anyway stayed Muslims. And recent limited access research conducted by the Center for Strategic Studies under the president of Azerbaijan shows considerable changes which took place in the society, Islam has become a considerable factor in the Azerbaijani society. Nevertheless, Islam in Azerbaijan is still more a way of a cultural identification rather than political philosophy. And the nation is still very much unaware of Islam's place and role in modern politics. By the way, this is not a problem of Azerbaijan. Absence of awareness of Islam's role and place in politics is intrinsic to many Muslim states. And even if you take Turkey, it took tens of years to find that appropriate model for that. So due to complexity of historic factors described above, at the moment, the features which would be very positive for the Azerbaijani nation building in the 19th century, they're the weaknesses for Azerbaijan now. And the result is that the major problems are the low level of religious awareness among the wide variety of people and the absence of local theology school. That's the major problem. Azerbaijan is not able to produce their own mujtahids. These are the people that Mr. Mamadov mentioned in his speech, and I want to go a bit more in that detail later. As we're coming to the core point of my speech, I would like to stress that these two weaknesses exist in Azerbaijan, neighboring to Iran. Iran, which is demographically, economically, and militarily much stronger than Azerbaijan. Iran, which is a 4,000-year-old culture with strong, structured, popular, and tested ideology, attractive to many people from Beirut to Kabul, and with numerous tools to propagate that ideology outside, including soft or not quite soft power. Iran, which considers territories between the Araks River and the North Caucasus as a part of its historic territory. And as it has already been mentioned, not some people in Tehran, usually the most aggressive ones, they don't even call Azerbaijan Azerbaijan Republic. They prefer to say Baku Republic, or a part of Iran, as Mr. Mollahzadeh said. Yeah. Iran, their supreme leader, calls himself Amir al-Mu'minin. It means the leader of all Muslims of the world. This is an important positioning. And the foreign policy concept of Iran says that no problem from Lebanon to Kabul, from Derbent to the Gulf, can be solved without Iranian participation. And of course, this concept includes also the Karabakh problem. They think that the Karabakh problem cannot be solved without Iranian participation. Iran has been continuously supporting Armenian aggressors, at least in economic and infrastructural terms. Since 1995, Iran has built three electricity lines connecting the two countries. A 1.2 billion cubic meters gas pipeline exists, and the gas electricity exchange plays an important role in cooperation of the two countries. Since 2007, Armenian cargo companies have border control preferences and easy procedure access to Iranian ports in the Gulf. In November 2012, $322 million Mehri Garachilar hydroelectric station project was initiated, and that both presidents, Ahmadinejad and Sarkisian, participated in the ceremony. They're also discussing about the possibility to open the free economic zones and other forms of cooperation. I'd also like to remind, as far as we're in the United States, I'd like to remind a case about the letter from the former U.S. Deputy Secretary of State, Mr. John Negroponte, to the President Sarkisian in 2008 regarding Armenia's transfer of machine guns and rockets to Iran in 2003. Those weapons were later found to have been used at least in one instance, in attack in Iraq by the Shiite militants that killed one U.S. Soldier and wounded six others. So this is the weapons that killed citizens of the United States. At the same time, Sarkisian was not president. He was the defense minister. I would also like to mention, before we go on with the Azerbaijan-Iran issue, I'd like to mention that if you analyze Armenian media in English or Armenian sources in English, you cannot find too many things about Armenian-Iran cooperation, because this is a thought over thing. They tend not to speak about their cooperation with Iran in English. You have to analyze the Armenian sources in Russian, where they call themselves almost brothers in arms with Iran. Because that's why if Armenian analysts, English-speaking analysts, will talk negatively about Iran, you should open out and show them the things that are written in Russian and state information agencies of Armenia in Russian. So see what they answer, if they can. So we'll go back to the issue. It's obvious that the level of religious awareness and absence of national theology school, as I mentioned, were the problems. And these problems demonstrate at the moment considerable dangerous negative synergies with Iran's strengths. Let's bring a small example to describe just one tool that Tehran is using against Azerbaijan, and that's the thing that Mr. Mamadov mentioned, the power of mujtahids. We currently observe that Tehran, it's the conservative part of its clergy, they are trying to politicize Islam in Azerbaijan and Islamize political agenda. So it means that there is such a mechanism as Shiite Taglit. It has been used in Iran since 1979 to project its soft, not always soft power, not only in Azerbaijan, in Iraq, in the Gulf, in Lebanon, for example. What is Taglit? According to the rules of Shiite Islam, each Muslim, individual Muslim, or Mughallit, has to follow a scholar, or a mujtahid. And that scholar must be alive. One cannot follow a dead mujtahid. And that scholar must possess a right to issue fatwas, religious orders, prescriptions for Muslims. Majority of mujtahids are from Qum. This is the center of Shiite thought. And the power of Taglit, it doesn't recognize borders, state borders. It means that if a mujtahid in Iran issues a fatwa that you have to go and overthrow your government, you have to go and blast the parliament, you have to go and keep people in the underground station, so literally the man has to do it if he's a true Shiite Muslim. And I want to mention also that this also reminds me, as far as I'm a specialist on Russia, I think that this reminds much the policy of Comintern in 1920s, 40s, when the communist movements were the sort of a fifth column of various European states used by Stalin's intelligence. Isn't it like that? Three Ayatollahs are particularly active in this field. Thank you. I'm finishing. It's Ayatollah Makarim Shirazi, Ayatollah Nuri Hamadani, and Ayatollah Jafar Supani, who from time to time issued fatwas of an aggressive character. And the last one worries me much because Ayatollah Jafar Supani has some followers in Azerbaijan and a number of his books are sold in the religious bookstores. So you should add up to this the number of NGOs, websites, and mosque jamaats. So these are the semi-proxies of Iran among Azerbaijani community. And of course, they benefit from the situation that there are some democratic values in our country, and it's not that easy to go and close an NGO or just destroy this or another jamaat in a mosque, because it's not like that. So as I said, these dangerous synergies, they create advantage for the conservative part of the Iranian clergy, which considers Azerbaijan as a subject, not object of its interest. And it's very difficult to predict the exact development of relations, because Baku has showed considerable ability to be neutral against any provocations from Tehran, but at the same time we've showed considerable ability to counter pressure when necessary. As for Iran, I think that it's not that bad because it's a big country. And we cannot say that Iranian government is like this. There are different camps in that government, and there are people that have more moderate views towards Azerbaijan and its policies. And we also understand that the elections are upcoming. So we hope that taking into account the balanced policy of Azerbaijan towards Iran and understanding of the importance of regional, global factors, we will not see any harsh and unpredictable developments in the bilateral relations. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Dr. Mirza, for
Excuse me, one more thing. I'm not a doctor so far, but I hope I will be soon.
Okay. Well, I don't have the power to confirm you with that, so let me correct myself, Mr. Mirza. But it was a very interesting, more historical exploration of the challenges of nation building in Azerbaijan, and particularly the religious relationship aspects of the religious relationship between Azerbaijan and Iran today. Last on our panel, and very much not least, let me turn to Alex Vatanka, who is here in town in Washington at the Middle East Institute and a renowned scholar and analyst of Caucasus and Trans-Caspian Islamic and security affairs. Thanks for joining us today, Alex.
Thank you very much, Andrew. Good morning, everyone. Let me start off by apologizing. I hope my voice will stay with me for the next 5-10 minutes, but I picked up something on a flight coming in last week, so bear with me. I really have 2 points that I want to go through this morning. Point number one is, if you look at the last few months of developments in Iran-Azerbaijan relations, you've seen ups and downs. If you take the last week, you see lots of new Iranian promises about security cooperation with Baku, why it's important, and so forth. If you look at the week prior to that, then it was about Iran taking Azerbaijan to the international court, picking up a fuss over division of the Caspian, threatening Baku with legal action for allegedly polluting the Caspian Sea and so forth. So you see this pattern back and forth, continuously going back, I would say, the last 2 years. And I suspect this will continue. And I suspect the crisis is something, certainly, and I'm going to focus on the Iranian perspective, something that Iran does not want to see get out of control. Iran right now simply cannot afford another major foreign policy hot potato on its lap. And Azerbaijan is not an issue that it's insignificant, because it's not as very significant. But in terms of timing, it's happening at a time when Iran really does have a full plate and wants to put this on the back burner. Now, I can come back to you, hopefully, in the Q&A later on about what the ultimate Iranian objectives are, and I share some of the views expressed already. The Iranians do have some, at least certain circles in Tehran, do have interest in terms of making inroads into this country, because remember, from an Iranian point of view, this is probably one of the most natural countries for the export of the Iranian revolution, Shia country of Azerbaijan. But that's not something that's at the forefront right now. That's my reading of the situation. And I will very briefly at the end talk about why Azerbaijan isn't just another foreign policy issue from Tehran's perspective. Look, this is a regime that's been in place for 34 years. And for 34 years, the regime in Tehran has had the issue of, are we the legitimate rulers of this country? I mean, that is, in many ways, if you look at the Iran-U.S. stalemate, that is what is at the center of the debate. They want a recognition from Washington. It's not just about the nuclear issue. Recognize us as the legitimate rulers. So that's something that the regime as a whole has, had to wrestle with for all this time. And then you introduce something like the issue of Azerbaijan into the picture. Why is Azerbaijan sensitive? But look, we've heard already, look at the cultural, religious, historic, linguistic, all sorts of proximities that exist. The idea of Azerbaijan becoming a foreign policy headache for him, much bigger than it is already, isn't just another foreign policy issue. It could have ramifications in Iran. I mean, at a worst-case scenario, the strategists in Tehran fear the dismantlement of Iran. They don't look at it just in case of Azerbaijan. They look at Balochistan, Khuzestan, Kurdistan. They look at the sectarian tensions that are happening across the Middle East, the Shia-Sunni divide and so forth. So there are a whole host of issues that play into it. And I think the interesting part about that is, if you look at the debate in Tehran, I would argue, while the hardliners, the ones who want to be supporting Islamist entities in Azerbaijan and elsewhere, are in the driving seat right now. They have the control because they have the ear of the Supreme Leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei. But in reality, in terms of numbers, they are a minority. And, you know, right now they're playing this high-stake game, particularly vis-a-vis the United States, on the nuclear issue. But if they fail, if there is a big failure happening on their watch, the question is, can the pragmatic forces come to fore? Now, we heard the presidential elections are coming up. Look at the debate right now in terms of the elections. You got really 3 schools of thought in Tehran. You got the people around Khamenei, particularly the top tiers around in the IRGC, the Islamic Revolution Guards Corps. Then you got the pragmatic forces that are around people like Ayatollah Rafsanjani and the so-called green reformist movement that is a bit of a mishmash, but it's there. And then you got people around Ahmadinejad. They're all over the place. They're populist in terms of their foreign policy. But my point is, you got different schools of thought when it comes to the pursuit of foreign policy. And you cannot discount the fact that sometime in the future, maybe after these elections, you can see a change away from this idea of exporting the revolution to the region. The idea that this region as a whole is not ready to accept our revolution, is not prepared for it, for whatever reason doesn't want it. And you can look at what's happening in the Arab world and say that's where the Iranians are getting their lessons from. Look how quickly Hamas and Muslim Brotherhood has been able to turn its back on Iran. The fact that Khaled Mashal packed up and left Syria as quickly as he did after 11 years of being there, having the Iranians foot the bill, the fact that Mohamed Morsi in Egypt has been very cold towards the Iranians, these things put together could create a whole new strategic shift in Tehran that says exporting of the revolution is not going to happen right now. Why don't we put our national interests first? And I think there are many people, again, if you look at and listen to the debate in Tehran, who are saying that, who are openly saying we will do much better in a country like Azerbaijan if we don't go in with the idea of the Vilayat-e-Faqih and Shia Islam, but go in with the idea of Persian poetry, food, and things that we can actually sell to these people. Not just in Azerbaijan, across the former Soviet South. These people exist, and they're actually in the majority, but because of the system in Iran, they don't have their voices heard. But again, you don't have to go back that far. Go back to 97 to 2005, when somebody within this Iranian regime, President Mohammad Khatami, did implement moderate policies. So I think that's the kind of, in the absence of regime change in Tehran, that's the kind of hope one could have and say, well, maybe the Iranian supreme leader, who right now is the ultimate power, might look around in the region and realize that the old idea of exporting the revolution is not going to happen. And I think, we might be moving in that direction. Let me stop there, and then I look forward to the Q&A.
Okay, thank you. We have about almost 20 minutes left for Q&A. So please, when I call upon you, please provide your name and affiliation, and I will turn to you later, Andranik. I promise you, you will have your time. Yes, here in the front row.
I'm Peter Humphrey. I'm an intel analyst. It's one of the countries, Iran is one of the countries that could conceivably fracture after a major change in administration. And in that scenario, South Azeris might look very fondly upon their brethren to the north. Would the Azeri people welcome a gnosis with South Azerbaijan if Iran were to dissolve in some way?
I will answer the question. Well, this is not a rare question. The accounts are different. Some say that 30 million Azeris live there, some say that 15, some say that 40. You can imagine that there may be very different people among them. And 9 million people live in Azerbaijan in the north itself. And since, as I said, since the Turkmen Chaypiyas, the roadmaps were different. Of course, there are people who would welcome that. And there are people also who think that these more than 200 years changed the two parts so much that this is just two parts of the same nation with a very different psychologies and mentalities. When I meet people from the South Azerbaijan, I see that, well, they're more or less similar. I can eat, I can drink, I can go to a party, I can discuss something. But it's a big question if it's possible to build the same state with those people. We're not talking about just living for a week together. This is a political issue. And the number of people there and in modern Azerbaijan is very different. So there are even people who think that it's not South Azerbaijan would join North, but vice versa. So this is very different opinion exists on that. Thank you.
But also I would like to add some issue that Azerbaijan is in Iran, probably in a very difficult situation. No any simple ethnic rights. Azerbaijani communities, they have no schools, they have no universities, they have not any potential opportunity to grow their culture and language. And I think this is the worst situation. And also culture, common culture, music versus also becoming a serious factor. For example, there were a negative reaction of Iranian government to new satellites of Azerbaijan. Because Azerbaijani TV, Azerbaijani music, rock play a very important role for collapse of Soviet Union, culture play a very important role. Culture of northern Azerbaijan created a serious influence to Iran. And also sport. There are some factors that the tractor club of Tabriz, during the matches of this football club, thousands of people shouting that Azerbaijan is not Iran, and with this type of efforts, sport and culture play a very important role keeping ethnic identity of Azerbaijanis in Iran, and new technologies, internet, TV, space broadcasting of Azerbaijanian culture. Cultural program from Turkish channels play a very important role for millions of Azerbaijani which has not any simple ethnic right. We can compare Armenian community, very small Armenian community, they have their own school, they have all their rights, protection of rights in Iran, but no such chances for Jews and Azerbaijanis. It's interesting.
Thank you. My name is Niklas Anzinger. I work for the American Enterprise Institute. I have a question for Mr. Vatanka. You briefly mentioned that Iran might adjust its policies vis-a-vis Azerbaijan in pragmatic ways. With the upcoming elections in Iran in mind, which are taking place in June, there are a lot of different factions and camps which compete for power in Iran. Do you see any tendency for the upcoming elections in the Iranian power structure?
Any
tendencies where it might go?
I wish I could say I do, but I can tell you foreign policy in the overall scheme of things in the election cycle so far has not been at the top of the list. I mean, right now we're still trying to figure out who's going to put their names forward. We've got another 2 weeks left before the final candidate list will be there. But the key foreign policy issues relate to the United States, obviously the nuclear program, and these are the so-called red strategic issues that only one person, Ayatollah Khamenei, controls, and he's not up for election, so it doesn't really matter. Nobody's going to dare question the fundamentals. Arguably, you will say foreign policy in Iran is about those issues, and that's exactly what we should have the debate about. But because of the system, the fact that Khamenei has very publicly and basically word by word has said, only I will decide the course of relations with the United States. And, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad tried, but he was slapped down. But I really think Khamenei is also sufficiently pragmatic to be able to listen to advice that comes to him from beyond the circles right immediately surrounding him who are hardliners. So even if you look at his own family household, there are people who are married into the Khamenei household who have people like Kamal Kharazi's family, the guy Sadiq Kharazi, who was a former ambassador to France, who runs a very decent website called Iranian Diplomacy, which happens to publish in Farsi and English. Look it up. You see these moderate views. Now, again, there's a lot of self-censorship going on. People have to be careful what they say. They cannot come in and say, you know what, we're totally wrong in terms of this hostility against country A, B, and C. But they are saying we need to change. But foreign policy, right now, the big issue in Iran is who will be approved by the Guardian Council to run for the elections. And people are playing it very safe. Nobody wants to dare say a word that will get them disqualified.
Oh, hello. Thank you for this very interesting panel and the discussion. I'm Hovhannes Nikolgosyan, a visiting scholar from Duke University. I have a question to Alex Votanka, and sorry to abuse your voice with a question, but whenever I'm hearing with this ethnic kinship issue between Azeris living in Azerbaijan and the people living in the north of Iran, I'm reminded of the difference between the epic tales that these two people consider their history, namely in Azerbaijan, they consider the Book of Dede Korkut, I guess, as the pan-Turkic tale, as their epic story, whereas the people in north of Iran consider the Shahnameh as their epic tale, which is all Iranian, all, shall I say, all Persian. Can you comment on this? Because I'm, whenever I'm hearing with these discussions, I'm reminded of this difference, which maybe we can draw parallels between Austrians and Germans who speak the same language, but nevertheless that they are very different nations.
You know, thank you for that question. I can't really tell you much about the specifics of that question because you simply don't know enough about it. So I'll stop there. But in terms of the bigger question about, you know, what's the nature of relations between the two people, what nation divided, it's about 200 years ago. Actually, I think exactly 200 years ago that, you know, the Russians captured what is today Azerbaijan, Armenia, so forth, from the Persian Empire. So a lot of water under the bridge already. You know, you listen to Azeri in Baku versus Tabriz, you either hear Russian or Farsi, depending where you are. You hear that. You know, obviously it's had an impact. But I think the peoples are much closer than one perhaps thinks as well. That's my reading. I can tell you the last couple of years, to my surprise, because I've always been one who's argued that the notion of greater Azerbaijan really doesn't have much traction among the elite in Baku. They look at the south and they see a project that they cannot manage. I mean, look at the sizes. A country of 8 million taking a country, Azeri's population of 25 perhaps to 30 million. How can you manage that? But on the Iranian side, also the idea of greater Azerbaijan has increasingly, though, in recent years, started to take off. I see the youth. I mean, I compare the older generation with the youth, and I see the youth are taking a different turn. Now, this is the question that deserves to be studied. Is it because of the Azeri kinship that is making them become more assertive in terms of their ethnic identity? Or is it a fundamental problem with the lack of legitimacy on the part of the regime in Tehran? So it's a governance issue. And I suspect it's got a lot to do with governance, because if you look at the Azeri grievances in Iran, they are pretty much identical to Kurdish or Baluch grievances in that country. Actually, they've come together in a sort of ethnic minority political parties have to come together as one entity, United Front, asking for better rights and representations. So I think we shouldn't take our eyes away from the question of governance and legitimacy, because I think we find a lot of the answer there in terms of what drives people in places like Urumiya, Tabriz, and Ardabil.
But also there is another factor, because Dede Korkut is a Turkish language and Shahnameh is Persian. Turkish identity is forbidden in Iran. That's why they, even in school, they study Shahnameh on Persian, and there is no any information about Dede Korkut, and it's forbidden even touch issue of Turkish identity of Azerbaijanis in Iran. That's why there is such a difference. But independent Azerbaijan has more chances to learn their own history, their own literature. And
thank you very much. My name is Fakhreddin Ismailov. I'm from the Embassy of Azerbaijan. I have a small question for Mr. Asim Molazadeh. He mentioned the Armenian community living in Iran. Unfortunately, it's become a major objective for Armenian community and diaspora organization to try to impede the relation between their host countries and Azerbaijan. Could you please elaborate your views on the impact or influence, if there's any, of Armenian community on bilateral relations between Iran and Azerbaijan? Thank you very much.
Very small Armenian community in Iran, but it's a unique community which has more rights than any other ethnic groups in Iran. It's an interesting situation that even Armenian community has a right producing alcohol, but there is no any other rights for Christian or Jewish communities in Iran. And of course, very strong and also business active Armenian community playing a role in a factor, for example, breaking isolation of Iran after the sanction on financial terms, using their links with Armenian banks, Armenian community in Iran working very actively. And of course, Armenian community in Iran creating problems on relationship between Iran and Azerbaijan, because it's obvious for us that Iran using the conflict between Azerbaijan and Armenia for keeping their influence in the region. And right now, Iran is a major factor who helped with energy, fuel to regime in Karabakh. I was a witness that in all Karabakh petrol station, there are the Iranian tanks. And it's maybe Armenian community Iran play a role for that. Again, we need a serious support for international community to help to Azerbaijan and Armenia solve this conflict. And maybe in this situation, we will break Iranian influence to the region of South Caucasus.
Thank you very much. I'm Andranik Kovanisyan, Embassy of Armenia. It has not become a surprise for the Armenian diplomats to hear from Azerbaijani speakers all kind of propaganda pieces. Whenever Azerbaijanis have an access to a microphone, we are ready to listen anti-Armenian propaganda, and this was the case today as well. But today, our Azerbaijani friends went as far as to question Armenia's independence and territorial integrity. Mr. Mamedov specifically referred to Armenia as geographically Azerbaijan territory. So I think it's obvious that anything said about the Nagorno-Karabakh conflict, any terms used, are also in Azerbaijani propaganda, including the allegations of so-called occupation. Just, I would not enter into the Nagorno-Karabakh issue, it's not the theme of the day, just to mention that the international mediation format, which is the Minsk group, has never referred to Nagorno-Karabakh as an occupied territory. And I will pass to comment the speakers of the day. Mr. Molazadeh claimed that Iran supported Armenia during the Armenian side during the war in Nagorno-Karabakh, which is another blatant misrepresentation. It's not true. On the contrary, there were some reports saying that Iran militarily supported Azerbaijan. I don't know whether these comments are or claims are true or not, but they are coming as high as from the Imam of Ardabil, as high as from the former commander of Iranian National Revolutionary Guard, and from the contemporary media. If one opens the media of 1990s, the Washington Post, New York Times, there are a lot of such allegations. Again, I don't know if they are true or not, but there have been reports that Iran supported Azerbaijan during the war in Nagorno-Karabakh, and there have never been any reports of Iran supporting Armenian side. This is blatant misrepresentation. Now let me pass to the issue of Iran-Armenian relations. Yeah, today we have heard a lot from our Azerbaijani friends about Iran relations with Armenia. However, I came here today to hear about the relations between Iran and Azerbaijan, as the title of the conference itself says. But I wonder why Azerbaijani friends are so shy to speak about the relations between Iran and Azerbaijan. You are sharing the cultural, religious, ethnic, strong kinship with Iran, and it's natural that Iran is cooperating on all those issues with Azerbaijan and vice versa, but you have not touched those issues. I don't know what's the reason. You can mention that Iranian students, for example, Azerbaijani students, for example, get their education in Iranian religious seminaries, like in Qum. Annually, about 250 to 300 persons from Azerbaijan get their education there. You can also dwell upon the economic relations. You haven't mentioned any project between Iran and Azerbaijan. But guess what? Iran has huge investments in Azerbaijan. 10% of Shah Deniz is Iranian. 10% of South Caucasus pipeline is Iranian. It's okay if it is within the international sanctions regime. I don't see anything bad in that when countries, neighboring countries, cooperate. And Armenia doesn't make any secret about its cooperation with Iran. It's transparent, it's free, because simple reason that countries in 20th century, especially neighboring countries, cooperate with each other. There is no secret about that. And Armenia does everything again in the framework of international obligations, and we are not making secret about that. But I'm surprised to hear the criticism of Armenian media freedom coming from a country which is ranked in the 15 most censored countries in the world. According
where
to
did you hear that?
According to the committee for
anybody told here about the critics of Armenian media. Who told here that there is no media freedom in Armenia?
Thank you. Let me finish. Coming from the country which is ranked 15th, in according to the Committee for Protection of Journalists, 15th most censored countries in the world. Now, you mentioned about
English, sir.
Sorry.
I mentioned not critics. I mentioned that you should distinguish the Russian sources in Armenia and Armenian sources or English sources. Because in English, Armenian media never writes about the brother relations. But you think we don't read that website or we don't go to openarmenia.am or something? We don't read Voskhanapat? We don't read those crazy analysts that you have? These people don't know Russian. They don't know that, but we do.
Time out. Question. Do you have a question?
No.
Okay. We do. then please. Sorry, Andranik. This is we don't need to hear the official position countered. If you have a question, please.
Mr. Kachin, there are a number of questions.
I'd like to hear one. We're literally out of time on this panel.
Let me pass to my question. Thank you for your patience. I would like to ask Mr. Mirza if he reads all the WikiLeaks cables, and not only those coming from Armenia, but also coming from Azerbaijan. In particular, has he read the cable coming from Azerbaijan, the Embassy of the United States in Azerbaijan in March 2009, which specifically uses the words sanction busting, and this is the language used by the cabal, not myself, describing relations between Azerbaijan and Iran. Thank you.
I don't comment issues on WikiLeaks.
I would like to remind our colleagues from Armenia about the resolution of Security Council of United Nations about the occupied Azerbaijani territory, also resolution of European Parliament, Parliamentary Assembly of Council of Europe about the occupied territory, ethnic cleansing of Azerbaijanis in occupied territory, because under occupation is not only a mountain part of Karabakh, seven regions of Azerbaijan occupied by Armenian forces, and all Azerbaijanis ethnically cleansed from this area. That's why I would like to remind you about that and about economic relations between Azerbaijan and Iran. I just gave an information, a trade between Azerbaijan and Iran, transparent, open information, is about 300 million, but the trade between Azerbaijan and Israel, 4 billion. But it's okay. Azerbaijan would like to continue to have a neighborhood, normal neighborhood policy with Iran. But we have other fact. In center of Baku, after fetwa of Ayatollah Alain Karani was killed, Rafik Taghi, radical secular writer. Iran tried to organize terror acts in Baku on eve of European song content, because this European popular music event was a serious threat against the totalitarian Islamic regime. And we mentioning that. Azerbaijan needs a normal relationship with all neighbors, and Azerbaijan now urgently needs a peace with Armenia. We're calling Armenia to peace. We need Armenia as a partner of Azerbaijan and Georgia. We need Armenia as a partner of the Euro-Atlantic community, not a partner of Iran or tool in the hands of Russia for the idea of restoration of Soviet Union in new form. Only Armenia has Russian troops in our region. And all troops from Georgia and Azerbaijan were moved to Armenia. It's a huge Russian military base, and as the Speaker of Russian Parliament says, that Armenia is our outpost, military outpost. Come on, we need Armenia as an independent state. We need Armenia as a partner of NATO country, partner of United States. And also we need that Armenian community in United States will help us to make Armenia as a friend of United States, not Iran or Russia. That's all.
Okay, we're going to have to bring this panel to an end. Let me extend my thanks to Mr. Malazada, Mr. Mirza, and Mr. Pataka for their excellent contributions and for your contributions as well. We will take a we will continue with the second panel starting sharply at 10:45, which is in about 7 minutes. Okay, thank you.